Welcome to the Wine or Milk podcast, where each week we rewatch and review nostalgic movies and media from our childhood to see if it aged like wine or milk. I'm Jess.
And I'm Kyle.
And this week we're going to be watching The Mummy.
I'm so pumped for this one.
Brendan Fraser is an icon in my household, easily. George of the Jungle, or what is his last name? O'Connor. What's his character's name in The Mummy?
Oh, I can't remember anybody's name.
What's his first name?
Kevin? No.
No. This is embarrassing. I guess I don't watch this movie as much as I thought I did.
I don't know. I don't remember anybody's name. I hardly remember your name.
I know his name is... He goes by O'Connor. They, like, shout that a lot. I'm pretty sure.
Are you sure? Because that's one of the actor's last names. Kevin J. O'Connor. Rick?
Rick O'Connor? O'Connell. Damn. All right. We got a lot to do. We've got a lot of work to do on this rewatch. Got to really jog the memory.
It's okay, though. I mean, that's the point, right? To not remember it too well, to see how it aged.
I'm terrible at names, clearly. I called the what's-his-face from The Terminator Sean Connor.
Isn't that his name? John Connor.
It's John Connor. Oh yeah, my God. I'm just bad with names. So, you know what? It's just how it goes.
In the same vein, like, we have Wikipedia up and it's talking through, like, the high-level plot.
Don't read it.
I'm not.
Cheating.
They have, like, links for the places that are real. And, oh my gosh, I think it's like that thing where you hear it and it doesn't sound that complex, but, like, reading it, like, Hamunaptra? I don't even know.
Hamunaptra?
I don't know.
That's where they go, with my very American accent.
Yeah, right? That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Like, when you read it, you're like, that doesn't look English.
Well, it's not English, so it's probably why.
Anyway, this is really fun for us, though, because this episode is going to come out basically right around the time where 6 months ago we released our first episode. So you've been doing this about 6 months. Pretty wild.
So what do you remember about the movie?
Okay, never mind. Just gonna, like, you know, celebrate, have, like, a little half birthday cake for the podcast.
Woohoo! Okay. I think the best way to celebrate is just to keep going.
Okay, sure.
That's what they tell me at work.
Okay.
So, just keep working, you know?
Just keep working. What do I remember? Okay. This movie, I'm pretty sure, was, like, pretty hyped up at the time, if I'm remembering.
The sequels definitely were. I don't remember if the first one was, but I remember when The Mummy 2 came out, it was on every commercial all the time.
And, like, I remember it being pretty big and, like, being pretty hyped for it. Maybe I'm misremembering it was actually the second one, but I remember going to Blockbuster with my dad and picking this out on a Friday night, and it was that thing where, like, the whole wall was just The Mummy. Mm-hmm. And you were, like, having to look behind every case to see if you could find it potentially on VHS, because it was 1999, and, like, really wanting to see it. There's a chance I actually saw this in the theater with my dad as well, but I really remember the Blockbuster.
You, like, saw this movie when you were 9 years old in the movie theater.
Why is that a weird thing?
Because I think it's PG-13, though. Maybe 9.
I don't know.
If that.
Okay, yeah. Well, maybe not. I don't know. I'm just saying, I remember grabbing it from Blockbuster. I definitely remember that.
I was not allowed to see PG-13 when I was 9.
When I was, like, not in that 9-10 area, it was, like, it depended on why it was PG-13.
This one's, like, kind of, like, low-key scary, though.
It was, like, a little spoopy. The spoopiest part is the beetles, the scarabs that climb up under your skin, and, like, the way they show it crawling around. I'm still, like, scared of that.
And the mummy himself was pretty scary. Like, when he's, like, not a human and, like, they show him, like, disintegrating. I wonder how the special effects hold up. Probably not that well.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I think that this was using more special effects than practical effects in my memory.
Yeah, because they animate the mummy, kind of, you know. Yeah. I think a lot of it is computer generated, at least for the mummy himself.
And, like, some of the other baddies, and, like, isn't there that scene of, like, the sandstorm, like, swallowing them up and stuff?
Mm-hmm. The sandstorm, he becomes, Imhotep is the sandstorm. He swallows them with his mouth. Ew, I hate that scene where he's, like, becoming, you know, he has to, like, suck the power out of people. He sucks the life out of other people. So he looks young and, like, gains his full power back. And he's, like, half mummy, half human at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like, you can see the scarab running around, but then his skin starts to form and then he starts chewing on it.
Ew, yeah.
I think of his little legs and his mouth is so gross. I hate it.
Yeah, that's pretty disgusting.
Anyway, so you were young when you saw it.
Young when I saw Blockbuster. It'll be interesting to watch because I think I'm going to mix up some of the plot points of like The Mummy and The Mummy Returns in my head before we watch it. But I just remember really enjoying it. It's got a great mix of like action and comedy where you like are invested in both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Brendan Fraser is just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
He is a really great physical actor.
Yes.
In like his like stunt acting as well as his just like physical comedy acting. He has great timing in both. So I'm excited for that. And then I remember it actually being like a pretty good story. Like fantasy, Egyptian, ancient Egypt story. That's kind of what I remember, is it's like actually kind of good.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of fuzzy on the details of the story.
I watch The Mummy and The Mummy Returns a lot. So I feel like I'm actually not going to be too fuzzy on the details. Despite what it might have shown when I don't know anyone's name, I think I know the details well. I remember the first movie having a better plot and it was still funny. The second movie as a kid I loved more because I thought very funny. And I remember the plot not being maybe as great.
Like, so what you're saying is the second one was more funny, less plot driven. First one's more plot driven, a little bit less funny.
I think there's still plot. It kind of goes a little slightly off the rails with the second one. Because that's what the second one is, when they're like, oh, you're a reincarnated Egyptian princess and you're the warrior, like, reincarnated that was sworn to protect her.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that one goes not off the rails necessarily, but it's like a little more fantastical.
They were rushing to find a way. They were like, what story can we tell to make a sequel? We made a lot of money.
The second one's the Scorpion King. The Rock is in it, remember?
No, that's the third one.
That's the third one?
Yeah. So it says The Mummy Returns is in... So The Mummy was in 1999. Mummy Returns was in 2001. And then The Scorpion King was a prequel / spinoff. And that came out in 2002.
Oh, crap. Okay. I do remember the second one, I thought. It's when their kid is really young. And there's a Scorpion King. Now I'm kind of confused where the Scorpion King plays a role.
Yeah, I can't remember. One thing, too, I remember is it really, like, when I was a kid, I really liked the Indiana Jones movies. Really enjoyed those. And this kind of, like, plays on a lot of the same themes and, like, vibes and ideas of that.
Sort of. I guess in some ways, yeah. I just wanted to be an archaeologist as a kid, and then I realized that most people have probably already dug up all the stuff, and you have to go to the desert, and it's really hot.
Yeah, I think that archaeology is not anything like it is portrayed in this movie or in Indiana Jones.
Also, like, ethical archaeology, right? I feel like that's a gray area. Does ethical archaeology exist? Probably. Small bits of
probably it. Probably does exist.
Small bits.
Probably not how it's portrayed in either of those movies.
No.
I mean, I guess Indiana Jones is ethical because he's, like, shooting Nazis and stuff in that way. But otherwise, it's still plundering other people's history and stealing it and putting it in your own museums.
I don't know. Anyway. Do you want to know what I remember?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. It opens.
Oh, God.
No, I'm just kidding. So basically, like, it starts with, like, a flashback, and it's showing, I think it's some kind of, like, golden city where there's, like, a ton of riches and things. And it's cursed because Imhotep is, like, this priest, but he has an affair with the pharaoh's wife.
Yep.
And then he gets, like, this special type of mummification that, like, they reserve for, like, big-time baddies. But, like, the Egyptians were, like, kind of scared to do it because it's kind of powerful. And, like, the city becomes cursed because they, like, mummify Imhotep in this way. And the city kind of, like, becomes lost.
Yeah, doesn't it, like, sink into the sand or something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Then, meanwhile, Rick O'Connell and his soldier buddies are commissioned to go find this Egyptian treasure back in, like, the 40s or 50s, I'm guessing. Yeah,
much later than he was mummified.
Yeah, yeah, way, 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 way back, thousands of years later. And they discover the city, but it's cursed, and, like, almost everybody dies. But the two people who escape are Rick and then this guy named Benny. Oh, meanwhile, the Magi are, like, supposed to protect it.
So you remember a lot.
Yeah, I remember a lot of the movie.
Okay.
Yeah. But basically, I don't want to spoil the whole thing, but the mummy comes back and he has to suck people's lives. He sucks their lives out of them to regain his power. And he wants to, like, reincarnate his lover Yes. Anaxinamun, I think is her name.
Wow.
Rachel Weisz is in it. Jonathan's her brother.
Mm-hmm.
They're like an archaeologist duo. And they basically take, they find Rick and like they want Rick to bring them to the Lost City. And then Benny, he's the other guy who saw where the city was. He partners with a bunch of Americans who also want the treasure.
Cool. So you remember a lot.
I love this movie.
Given that you feel like you, or not feel like, that you clearly remember so much, how do you think this one's going to age?
I think well.
You think it'll age well?
I think it's going to be funny. I think Rachel Weisz is a strong female character. I think they kind of do get into that like ethical piece of history and archaeology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the jokes are going to hold up. I'm just worried about the special effects. I think that's what I'm most worried about.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Is there anything else that you're worried about might drag it over to the side of Milk?
I just love this movie. I love Jonathan, her brother, and mm-hmm. he used to be, like, I think, comic relief quite a bit, and I'm worried that he's not going to be as funny as I thought he was when he was a kid.
Yeah, that's what I'm interested in seeing is, like, does the comedy hold up, and what type of comedy is it? I don't really remember.
I remember there being some physical comedy. I remember there being, like, some witty wordplay, mm-hmm. especially, like, Rachel Weisz's character, Evie, I think her name is, and Rick. I think they have a lot of, like, flirty, angry banter where they make fun of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of flirty I like.
Yeah.
Personally, that's probably not a good thing.
And, like, I remember Brendan Fraser, he's just so charming and electric on the screen. Mm-hmm. So, like, I remember a lot of the comedy being driven by him and, like, almost, like, how he reacted to situations and stuff and, like, the zany, kooky situations that they were put in.
Mm-hmm.
Much more than necessarily, like, jokes being said. So yeah. That could help it age well.
I feel like there's, like, a whole, like, gotta go, we're leaving right now type thing. And, like, they're running and he's kind of, like, casual about it. I can't remember what the joke was, but it's funny. I'm excited for it. I think there's tons of action.
Yes.
Which, can't go wrong with that. Tons of comedy. I remember it being pretty funny. And there's a romance. Like, what more do you want? You get all three.
I hope the romance feels good, feels authentic, isn't just there to sell tickets. You know what I mean?
I think it will be. I don't remember, like, having negative feelings about this romance.
Yeah.
And then in the second movie, they're married and have a baby. So, like, you know it was real.
So it's real.
it was real.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty pumped. And I'm excited to go in kind of blind to, like, the plot and stuff and revisit the kind of, like, childhood magic behind it. Because this was one that I remember, like, the hype behind it. I remember my dad and I really wanting to see it. And then I remember us being pretty surprised in the direction that it went, like, very pleasantly surprised that it was that mix of action and funny and all of that stuff and a really strong cast, but also, like, an engaging story. Like, I remember being a little bit surprised that it was so full-bodied in a way.
As a kid, you were like, this is a full-bodied film. When I'm 9 and I'm at the movie theater watching a PG-13 film.
you're really busting my balls today.
You hear what I said about flirting?
No, I just, you know, like, when you go in and there's, like, movies that you're like, oh, when you're a little kid, you're like, oh, ha, 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 that was so funny. But then you're also like, oh, my gosh, like, that was really fun. I'm, like, gonna go, like, dream about this and, like, draw pictures mm-hmm. about it. I remember it being more that type of thing, where I was, like, really into it.
I wonder how informational it is. Like, how much do they actually bring, like, real Egyptian history to this movie, and is it responsible in that regard?
Yeah, I'm actually kind of curious. I have no idea.
And then they talk about the gods a little bit, and mm-hmm. they talk about the mummification process. I remember I have a distinct, like, still frame in my head of Rachel Weisz talking about how they would stick a hot poker up the person's nose and scramble the Blah. Brains.
Yep.
Yeah. She's, like, doing this, like, arm motion. That's one thing. I don't know enough about Egyptian history. But that's part of the reason I liked this movie as a kid, because what kid isn't obsessed with ancient Egypt?
Oh my gosh, right? Like, and I think when it came out, that was, like, right around when I would have been learning about ancient Egypt and stuff, too. So it, like, really slotted into
Why is it that every year until you're 13, you learn about ancient Egypt, and then all of a sudden they never talk about it again in school?
I don't know. It's a lot of the old stuff when you're a little kid.
I don't think so. It's not like, oh, okay, when you're in kindergarten, you're going to learn about the oldest history.
I don't know.
And then by the time you're a senior in high school, you'll do the 2001... I don't know what happened in 2001. The 2000 election. I guess 9/11 happened.
That did happen in 2001.
Awkward. Yeah. The war on terror. But
That might not have been until 2002. Anyway, you could ask your mom. She is a teacher. She might have insight into how the curriculum for history is decided.
Well, she recently started teaching history this past year.
Yeah, you should ask her about it. Be like, are you still teaching ancient Egypt?
Also, are you going to play the mummy for your fourth graders?
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if this was played in school. I bet one of my teachers played this.
You would need a permission slip unless you were in high school.
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
I bet it happened. But anyway. Well, that's if it is PG-13.
I'm pretty sure it is.
That's lacking on this Wikipedia page.
Joe, look at the box office, though. This movie was a hit.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. Give us the facts on this film.
Okay. The Mummy. Directed by Stephen Sommers. Produced by James Jax and Sean Daniel. Screenplay by Stephen Sommers. Story by Stephen Sommers. Lloyd Fonville and Kevin Jair. Starring Brendan Fraser, Rachel Weisz, John Hannah, Arnold Vosloo, Jonathan Hyde, and Kevin J. O'Connor. Music by Jerry Goldsmith. I remember the music being pretty good.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
Now that I think
like
about it.
I liked the music. I feel like I did.
Came out on May 7th, 1999, 125 minutes, very long, 2 hours and 5 minutes.
I was going to say it. I was ready.
That's an easy one.
Yeah, it is.
I can't let you off the hook on that. And budget, as Kyle likes to point out, budget was $80 million, which is a pretty big budget.
Yeah, pretty big.
They must have expected to be a hit. And the box office was $416.4 million.
Very, very successful. Very, very successful.
We call this Brendan Fraser's retirement plan.
That's how it's colloquially known, yeah. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, it was actually filmed in the Sahara Desert. And it says the crew endured dehydration, sandstorms, and snakes during work in the Sahara.
Dude, they earned that $416.4 million.
They really did. It just, so you, I know that you know, that doesn't just all go to the actors. They don't just like all get that.
Sometimes I think you think I'm actually stupid.
No, I'm just double checking. I don't think you're stupid.
As you're smiling and laughing no, and you're so looking
insulted.
In the eye.
I didn't mean to insult you.
You definitely insulted me.
My bad.
Yeah, so that's the movie. There's apparently a legacy section on Wikipedia. So this movie had a lasting impact.
Well, yeah, because it says there's the Mummy and the Mummy Returns and then the Scorpion King. The Scorpion King had its own sequels. And then in 2008, there was the Tomb of the Dragon Emperor, as well as an animated series and a... Oh, wait, and then the prequel. So I feel like I might remember the animated series, but like this has a ton of stuff. It's like its whole universe.
I'm like really upset that I can't remember the Scorpion King now because I know I've seen it a bunch. Mm-hmm. I definitely remember the second when the Mummy Returns. I'm pretty sure that's when their kid gets kidnapped because he puts the bracelet on.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's the Scorpion King.
Yeah, I can't remember.
I'm so confused now.
Well, I'm excited to go watch this, get my memory jogged. Seems like you don't need it as much as I do, but
I'm going to have a great time. I'm making popcorn for this one.
Oh, can't wait. All right, well, let's go watch.
Putting garlic jalapeno salt on it.
Ooh. Oh, wow. Yeah. Do you want to go watch right now? Because that sounds delicious.
I'm not sharing. You called me stupid, so this is my popcorn now.
I did not call you stupid. Anyway.
Not in so many words you did.
I didn't mean to. I'm excited to watch the movie.
We'll go. I'm not actually mad at you, but that was the least sincere apology I've ever heard.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Okay. All right. Let's We're gonna go watch. I'll share my popcorn with you.
And Jess is gonna share her popcorn. What a great
day. I went to preschool, I learned that lesson.
Oh my gosh.
I think the biggest thing that came back for me watching this was all of the lines my little brother used to say around the house from this movie that I forgot about.
Yeah. It had a lot of really funny, just like quick throwaway lines that were really pretty good.
Mm-hmm. I remember my littlest brother, when we would sit at the dinner table to eat, if we were eating something he didn't particularly like, mm-hmm. he would go, "Nice gooey mummy," all the time at dinner. And I completely forgot about that.
That's pretty funny.
It's also gross because you have a mouthful of, like, barbecue chicken and someone's talking about mummy guts.
So. That is especially gross, yeah.
Yeah.
In the same vein of, like, lots of funny jokes, what I actually really enjoyed was it almost didn't feel like there was a main character. Like, it was almost everybody was, like, a supporting actor. Everybody had, like, a little bit of character development, a little bit of jokes, a little bit of, you know, like, extra screen time. That was just them.
Yeah, it was like a nice ensemble movie almost.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we're going to go out into the desert and go get some treasure. And then, oh, let's kill a bad guy while we're at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like Brendan Fraser is obviously like the dude, right? He's like the hero or whatever. And Rachel Weisz is like the heroine or whatever. But like they didn't have like an inordinately large amount of screen time. It wasn't always them moving the plot along. It wasn't always them saving the day.
Yeah. I agree. And also, it made it so when the stakes were high and people were dying, you were actually sad. Like, yeah. When the Americans were dying, I was bummed. Even though they weren't, like, the main focal point of the story.
Another really interesting thing, they don't say anybody's name in this movie.
No, they don't. I was, like, trying to, like the warden. What was the warden's name?
I had to look it up. His name was Gad.
What about the guy from the Magi who was, like, the main guy?
I just wrote the Magi.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
He was the group, but also the individual at the same time. Or Mr. Burns. You didn't know his name until he basically died.
Yeah, until his eyeballs got eaten.
Yeah, there's eyeball eating in this movie. Spoiler.
Spoiler alert.
They don't get eaten. They get taken out and put in a mummy's eye.
Yeah.
Socket. Fair. And then he eats his essence, I guess.
Yeah. The other thing that I just got to say, because we were worried about it in the opening, I am wildly impressed with how the special effects aged in this movie.
Oh, that's right. Also, I don't think we said if we thought it was going to be a wine or not when we first watched it.
Yeah, we were kind of beating around the bush, but I think we both were thinking it was going to be a wine. We just forgot to say it.
Speak for yourself.
You came pretty darn close to saying you think it's going to be.
Oh, no, definitely. I thought it was going to be a wine going into it, for the record.
Yeah. But yeah, the special effects really aged a lot better than I thought they were going to.
I was shocked. I think there had to be some practical effects mixed in.
I have no idea how they pulled it off, but it was really good. Like, really, really good.
Well, didn't Lucasfilms or whatever do the special effects for it?
Yeah. What is it? Like, special lighting and sound? I can't imaginative lighting and sound. It's something like that.
It was owned by Lucas, George Lucas, though.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that's actually where most of the Mythbusters got their start as well. Like, Grant Imahara, Jamie, and... Oh my gosh.
Adam.
Adam, thank you.
No problem. I got you.
I think a lot of them worked there. But yeah, I mean, like, I can definitely see why it costs so much.
The movie? Yeah.
They really had a lot of special and practical effects. The sets were really crazy. There's a ton of stuff in this movie. It's easy to see why it cost as much money as it did. But it actually, I gotta say, blew me away with how well the special effects aged, because they used a good amount of them.
You like the sand monster when the sand is going to swallow their plane. It actually it held up, I thought.
And even the mummy, when he was like all, you know, see-through and stuff, really blew me away with how much it held up.
It definitely could be better now, but I don't know how much better it could be.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I've watched stuff. Like, there was times when we would be watching Game of Thrones and I was like, this is awful CGI. And that was in like 2015,
with an HBO TV budget.
Yeah. So for this to be 1999 with computers that had, like, you know,
dial-up,
half a meg of RAM, you know, so really wild. Anyway, I'm going to go into the recap. Sound good?
Before you jump in, did any, like, scenes pop out to you like, oh, yeah, like, I remember this from a kid, like, I'm excited for this?
The opening scene right away was like, boom, nostalgia. I really loved the opening scene with the little bit of narration over it.
So good.
The one where they're all the people in the town are zombified and saying
Imhotep. Yeah.
And coming after them was really iconic. The plane scene always sticks out to me.
Oh, where the sand, he like becomes a sand face and swallows their plane.
Yeah. And Winston like flies the plane into the ground.
Yeah.
Not on purpose.
No, he was really drunk.
Actually, yeah.
Dude was always drunk, so.
And then Benny, just the character of Benny. Was very iconic.
I love Benny's character.
He's acted very well. The, like, voice cracks that the actor does with him and stuff.
Oh, he's really a very good, consistent character throughout the whole movie. Yeah. From beginning to end.
And then just kind of a lot of the atmospheric stuff. They use lighting really well in the movie. It's there's a lot of like little creepy bits where they build the tension through like the set and stuff. And the sound design was really good. So, yeah, a lot of like those little like atmospheric things really brought me back into the movie and like seeing it for the first time. How about you?
So many things. I think the biggest nostalgia piece for me was Jonathan's character.
Yeah, actually, I kind of completely forgot how big of a character he was. And then I was very pleasantly surprised when he was in a lot of scenes and really, like, almost carried them.
Oh, he was so funny and just so casual. He brought a lot of levity to everything. Like, for example, when Evie's trying to, like, thumb through the book to find the right right verse to read or the right piece to read.
That was a great scene. Oh, and my God.
Evie's, like, getting strangled and he's like, I don't know what this bird-like symbol is. And she's, like, screaming it through her, like, strangled voice. And he's like, oh. Oh, I see. You know, just so casual. It was just funny. It was well done.
Yeah, there's a really solid balance of like the action, the tension, and the levity. But it almost never took away from it. It never made it seem like they weren't taking the movie seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think can be a hard balance to strike.
Agreed. No, they were definitely like more casual and flippant about like the end of the world, but I mean they were still like making plans to stop it and going after it in the best way they could. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I liked it.
Yeah, it was a really fun watch.
A lot more action than I remember, too.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it was very, very action.
Full of action.
I mean, well choreographed as well.
That was another very nostalgic thing. This is weird, but like as far as the action goes, how they're always pulling out two pistols and shooting at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way that's actually...
Oh no!
A legit strategy. They're not going to hit anything that way.
No, it was very funny because they were like constantly calling the Americans cowboys and stuff, and like, but they were acting just like it, with just like taking out pistols and like flippantly just shooting wherever they wanted to,
dude,
and having way too many guns.
The one dude had a pistol and he was just taking his hand like Charlie, like when she like knocks things with her paw over and over again. He was just like hitting the
hammer
like over and over, like ch-ch-ch-ch-ch.
Yeah. The scene on the boat too. I don't know. Let's get into it. We'll talk about it when we get to him in
the boat scene. Jonathan and the boat scene are probably my most iconic.
Yeah, the boat scene
memories
really great.
In my head. All right. Yeah. Well, we basically did a recap already. Now running through our favorite parts.
So I'm going to try something new. I'm going to do a wicked high level overview, and then we'll actually do the real overview. It's just because there's so much in this movie, and there's so many names and places. I feel like it might be helpful to just like tie it together real quick. So basically the story is there's this way back in the day in ancient Egypt, there's this really powerful priest. He's Shtupin, the pharaoh's mistress.
Shtupin.
He gets in trouble for it. They mummify him and he's super powerful. And they do this special mummification where he can be reborn.
The Hamandai or something like that.
Yeah. Hamandai, I think.
Hamandai.
Hyundai.
Nope, that's a car. Hyundai Sonata. He gets the Hyundai Sonata.
Yeah.
And it's very, very painful, but also it comes with great power. With great power comes great responsibility. Ben Parker was there.
Peter Parker. Oh, Ben Parker is uncle, yeah. I thought you were... Anyway.
Defying gender roles here. every day.
Every day. That's what we're all about. So he gets buried in this place, Hamunaptra.
That's the city of the dead.
Yeah, and it also is where, like, the original pharaohs hid all of their gold. Mm-hmm. So lots of people go there.
Well, they try to find it, but it's hidden.
Yeah. Eventually, Brendan Fraser finds it. He gets kind of, like, kicked out of there, and then people hire him to go back. They go back, accidentally wake up the mummy from Hamunaptra.
Mm-hmm.
That's Imhotep. He is super powerful, and, like, there's, like, all these prophecies about how he's going to bring the 10 plagues on the world.
He really just wants to wake up his dead girlfriend, though.
Yeah.
It's really his goal.
And so...
It's like under wraps.
It is, actually. That's
all
upsetting.
All by myself.
I'm happy that song was not in this movie. I really would have soured it for me.
There's no lyrical music in this movie.
No. So then the rest of the movie is them, like, trying to find ways to thwart him. Eventually, they get back to Hamunaptra. They figure out how to beat him, and they do. But, like... We're going to go into it, but that's the overarching theme. I just wanted to put it out there in case you haven't seen the movie, because it might be a little hard to follow because it's very actionful.
Full of action. And then, like, honestly, for a movie that's very fast paced, like, pretty full of detail.
Yeah.
There wasn't, like, a lot left to be, like, oh, there wasn't, like, a lot of plot holes. Like, oh, what happened with this? Or, like, how did that work out? They kind of explained it all.
It was very tightly wound, and it's almost because that opening scene was so powerful. They literally just, like, tell you what the movie's going to be about in that opening.
Mm-hmm.
But not in a bad way. They're literally just like, yeah, he dies, he's going to be reborn, and it's going to be a bad thing. Now let's figure it out.
Yeah. You know? It's almost like, I like the opening because, yes, it was narrated and it was very like, I'm telling you exactly what's happening, but it almost felt like, oh, here's a story, a bedtime story about ancient Egypt.
That's a really good way to put it. It's like, here's this thing in lore, and now let's like live it.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool. Anyway, so that's the super high level. Now to get into it.
It opens.
Right off the, it opens.
No opening credits.
No opening credits. Really shocked by that. This seemed like a great movie for opening credits, but no opening credits. And I believe we're in Thebes.
Yes, it opens in Thebes.
And the CGI here is gorgeous. They built, like, an entire, like, city.
I bought it, though. I literally bought it. I was like, oh, we're in ancient Egypt.
It was really good.
It was a little hazy, right? But I was like, ah, desert.
Yeah.
Desert haze. Makes sense.
And so we find out that Imhotep, super powerful priest, is Shtupin, the pharaoh's mistress.
Anaxunamun.
I'm going to need your help saying that one. I could not figure out how to spell it, so I'm probably going to get it wrong.
She has full body paint on.
Yeah.
She looks great.
And he, like, smudges her arm. So then the pharaoh comes back, notices that somebody touched her, gets really mad. She is like, dude, I'm tired of being owned by you, and kills the pharaoh. Then the pharaoh's guard comes in, finds the pharaoh dead, and
she, like sacrifices herself. She hides Imhotep.
Yeah.
And she's like, my body is no longer his temple, and stabs herself.
Pretty good line.
Trigger warning.
Really enjoyed that that little bit of her taking back her.
I'm pretty sure she was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. It was like a big deal when she was in this movie.
Oh,
people were like, oh yeah, that hot mama is going to be in this movie.
That hot mama.
She is a hot mama. I'm sure she's a great actress, too.
She's a very beautiful woman.
She's a reprising role in Mummy Returns. She has a much bigger role, which is cool.
I can't wait to watch it someday.
I'll go watch it right now, honestly.
So, they bring her to Hamunaptra to mummify her, but... No. Excuse me.
Imhotep takes her to Hamunaptra to try to resurrect her,
because yeah,
that was their plan. She's like, I'll kill myself now and take the fall, but you'll resurrect me and we'll be together.
Yep. And so, he starts the ritual to bring her back, but the pharaoh's guard tracked him down and stops the ritual. So she doesn't get to be fully reborn. They do the really creepy, powerful mummification where they mummify him alive, put him in a sarcophagus, and then he is eaten alive by scarabs.
Mm-hmm.
Really horrifying.
And then all of his priests are also mummified alive, but they don't get the extra scarab level.
Yeah.
And they lock him in his sarcophagus with a fancy key.
Yes. And then the Magi are introduced and they're like, we're never going to let him come back. He'll be way too powerful. So then we jump all the way forward to 1923, and the Magi are like, for 3,000 years, we the Magi have kept watch.
Because Hamunaptra is a hidden city.
Yep.
And people have been trying to find it to get treasure that's buried there for centuries.
And so we are in Hamunaptra, where we meet Brendan Fraser and his friend Benny. They're in some sort of battle war in Hamunaptra.
Mm-hmm.
And
Brendan Fraser is Rick O'Connell.
Rick O'Connell, thank
AKA
you.
AKA O'Connell.
We don't hear his name for the first, like, hour of the movie, so I just kept writing Brendan Fraser.
He looks good.
This is, like, great.
Peak Brendan Fraser.
He looks really, really good. So they're in this battle. They're way outnumbered. Eventually, he tries to, like, flee, basically, and Benny, like, closes this door on him and kind of, like, betrays him, even though they're supposed to be buddy-buddy.
Right off the bat, Benny's a coward.
Right off the bat. And Brendan Fraser, no, Rick, gets cornered, and whoever's pursuing him, like, he's standing in front of the statue of Anubis and, like, makes a creepy noise, and they get scared off. They run away. And so he just kind of walks out into the sand, and the Magi are like, should we kill him? And the head Magi is like, no, the desert will take him, or mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah, there was actually the creepy sand face tried to swallow him at the base of the
Oh, universe. Yes, thank you, that too.
Because the sand face comes back later.
Yep.
Cool sand tricks. Imhotep is a magician.
Yeah, and, like, that's not easy to render. like, that takes a lot of computer power to render, like, individual bits of sand. Like, I really cannot overstate how impressed I was by the CGI.
See, I don't work with computers. I just use them to email and log all my client notes. So it's just magic. I'm just like, oh, yeah, computers can do anything. Makes sense.
They can, but especially in that time, it's really crazy.
Yeah, my knowledge is. It's just, you know how people are like, oh, movie magic. That's mm-hmm. what it is to me. I'm like, oh, yeah, movie magic.
Movie magic.
You wave your wand and there's a sand monster on the screen.
Exactly. So we jump forward 3 years and we're in a library museum and the librarian accidentally knocks over all of the bookcases and that like domino effect, very comical. And this is Evelyn, Evie.
She's great. I wanted to be Evie so bad growing up.
She's awesome. Really love her. In this
Between
movie.
Her and Helen Hunt from Twister, like that was my goal.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be behind a desk right now.
No, you should be out in the world doing science.
Chasing mummies or twisters, whatever is more realistic.
So she kind of gets a little bit reprimanded for her actions there.
She's a catastrophe. She's worse than the plague.
Yeah, great line. And we find out that she like applied to be a Bembridge scholar, right? Is that it? Bembridge?
Yeah, which I found out is made up. My whole life, I thought that the Bembridge scholars existed and they like worked for the British Museum or something.
Yeah.
Another fantasy for this universe.
It's a good name. It really makes you think it could be real. Bembridge.
The way she talks about it, I bought it. I was like, oh yeah, girl, you apply. You get in there. But she's basically a librarian, but wants to be like a scholar, archaeologist type person.
Yeah, doing research in the field, but they deny her because she doesn't have enough field experience.
She says she can read and write ancient Egyptian. She can read hieroglyphs. Her parents were in love with Egypt, and like her dad was like an archaeologist.
Yep. And then we are introduced to her brother, who pranks her by hiding in a sarcophagus and moving the mummy around. Really inappropriate.
Biggest
but really
pet
funny.
Peeve of this movie is how like flippant they are with all these ancient relics. They're yeah. just touching them all the time and like manhandling the map and everything.
It was the Roaring Twenties. No?
No, yeah. It was. You're right. No comment. You're right. You're right. No comment.
Anyway, so he brings her a relic that he found, and he's trying to just basically get money, and she realizes, like, opens up, and it has a map, and the map is to Hamunaptra.
She's like, Jonathan, you finally got something worthwhile.
And she brings it to the museum curator, who's like, oh, Hamunaptra's not real, and accidentally burns the map, which isn't great.
Mm-hmm. Right where Hamunaptra is on the map.
Yep.
And I put fishy, fishy.
Fishy, fishy. And then Jonathan's well, don't worry. I know who I got this from. Maybe he knows more information. So this is when we are reintroduced to Rick 3 years in the future. He is in jail. And basically they make a deal with him. He's about to be hanged. So if they are able to bust him out of jail, he will bring them to Hamunaptra.
He had a pretty, pretty good time, apparently.
Pretty, pretty. And he's like, yeah, I was in Hamunaptra when I got that relic, so, like, I know how to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So, he is about to be hanged, and Evie and her brother Jonathan cut a deal with Gad, the prison warden.
I've never heard him called Gad.
I literally don't think it's in the whole movie. I found it on Wikipedia.
They literally just call him the warden.
And they're like, he knows how to get to Hamunaptra, we'll give you a split of the profit. They haggle down to 25%. He's let go. They get ready to.
It's a pretty good deal.
Go. Very good.
Incredible deal. Bail for Brendan Fraser.
Incredibly, incredibly high.
Millions bail. Of dollars, probably.
Yeah. In that time's money. So billions and trillions now.
And meanwhile, while Rick is like telling Evie about Hamunaptra, she's like, oh, yeah, you know, like, tell us how to get there. And he's like, do you want to know how to get out of there? And he like has her lean in and he kisses her right on the lips.
Yeah.
Shocking. And he's like, you got to get me out of here then, because I'm the map. I'll get you there. But that comes back later.
Yeah.
Immediate tension.
Immediate tension. So they all get on the boat on the Nile to start making their trek.
It's Rick, the warden, Evie, and
Jonathan
are all going to Hamunaptra together.
And on the boat, they actually run into Benny, who was in Hamunaptra with Rick. And so he knows how to get there. And he's leading a group of American, like, expedition group who's looking for the treasure as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of a race now.
And an Egyptologist. He's in the mix as well.
Yes.
So he's got some background knowledge. But yeah, Benny the Coward is also trying to make a buck and guide people to Hamunaptra.
Yep. And so Rick is still mad at Benny for locking him out, and he actually throws him over the boat right into the Nile. And then these assassin dudes come over the edge of the boat, and they're looking for the key, well, the relic, which ends up being a key, that Evie is holding with the map.
Mm-hmm. They're the Magi.
Yep. And so...
they're still trying to protect Imhotep. They're trying to nip this in the bud.
So, big battle ensues on the boat. It ends up catching fire and sinking. And in that, the map is also burned.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily, Brendan Fraser is the map. That's what he says.
I'm the map. Don't worry. I'm the map. All in here. Yeah. That's what he says.
Really great scene. Wonderful choreography. I mean, like, I couldn't even begin to explain it, but it's really funny. Everybody's used, like, literally every character that is on the boat has a little scene,
mm-hmm.
and it's really charming.
Oh, it's so great. You see, like, the Americans literally guns blazing, like, just, like, not giving a crap that the boat's on fire, just wanting to, like, shoot people.
They were, like, excited. They were like, oh, my God, yeah, I get
this
to shoot
this. This is what I live
now.
For. And I was like, I'd be terrified. And then Jonathan's like, did I panic? I did not. Evie gets tossed over the boat. A lot of comic relief in this battle, too.
A lot of comic relief. And you really start to see all of the characters developing, mm-hmm. too. Like, Evie's really, like, kind of obstinate and stubborn and, like, wants to do what she wants to do.
He's like, oh, do you know how to swim? She's like, I can swim if the occasion calls for it. He's like, it calls for it, and just throws her overboard.
Yep.
Or the warden, even. He's like, what should we do to Rick? And Rick is mm-hmm. like, you wait here, I'll go get help. And he, like, jumps overboard.
Yep.
And you can see the warden, like, kind of playing it over in his head and then just, like, angrily jumping over the boat, too. It's really funny.
Yeah, it's a really good scene. So they all make it over out of the Nile, and...
they're left to trek on foot the rest of the way.
Yeah.
Get some camels, get some horses.
Yeah, they find a little town, they buy some horses, camels, and they head out to Hamunaptra. The Magi see them coming. And we think our party, you know, Rick, Jonathan, etc., are all the first ones there. But actually, Benny and the Americans are right behind them. And they all kind of line up in front of where Hamunaptra is supposed to be. And then as the sun comes up, it's kind of revealed from the haze.
Mm-hmm.
And on the boat, they made a bet about who would get there first. And so they race to get into Hamunaptra.
Rick and Evie win, of course.
Yep. Evie wins, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And so they start to do their excavation stuff. Rick is starting to crush a little bit on Evie. I think, you know, how independent she is really starting to surprise him. And so he, quote unquote, buys her an excavation kit from the Americans. Really, he just swiped it.
Oh, because all their tools were lost in the boat fire.
Yeah. And so they go underground and they start excavating to try and find the treasure of Hamunaptra.
The Americans are looking for gold, but Evie in particular is looking for the Book of the Dead, which she believes, according to Bembridge scholars, is buried at the base of the foot of Anubis. So she's like trying to dig over there, and the Americans are going another way, and the Egyptologist is like, what would a woman know? Blah, blah, blah. But Evie really wants to find the Book of the Dead. That's like her big treasure.
I think she's actually looking for the Book of the Living, the Book of, because they switch it and it's in the wrong place.
Oh, you're right. She does want the Book of the Living.
Yes.
The Book of Amun-Ra.
Yeah, that's supposed to be in the Anubis statue, but the record is incorrect, and they actually find the Book of the Dead in a little bit.
You're true.
So yeah, they all kind of just start exploring Hamunaptra. Gad, though, poor Gad,
the warden,
is looking for treasure, and he finds some blue gold scarabs. Meanwhile, the Americans are opening something in a statue, but it sprays all of the workers there with, like, pressurized salt acid or something like that. Really horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Then Rick and crew, they find Evie and crew, they find the sarcophagus. Meanwhile, we cut back to Gad. It's a crazy hectic scene. Everybody's doing stuff. He's getting more of the gold, the blue gold scarabs, but he accidentally drops one in the sand, which wakes it up, and a real scarab emerges. Crawls up his foot into his brain, and he ultimately dies.
Very scary. Still freaks me out a little bit. There's a lot of weird bugs in the Nile, too, like the one that goes in your foot and, like, crawls up your leg. So, like, that really actually freaks me out.
Oh, no, it's terrifying.
The warden also always talks about how he hates bugs. So it's, like, an extra terrifying way for him to go.
Yeah, not great. So Evie and crew are back at the sarcophagus, and they say it's for he who shall not be named. So
Voldemort.
Voldemort's sarcophagus. Really
AKA
fun tie-in here.
Imhotep's sarcophagus. I found it.
Yeah.
He was buried at the foot of Anubis.
And, you know, Imhotep was kind of making, like, Horcruxes in a way.
And he's also bald.
Yeah. So lots of Harry Potter tie-ins here.
He's really a Harry Potter of the Middle East. Nope, he's a Voldemort of the Middle East.
Well, isn't like George and his wife, don't they go hunting for hornback dragons in the...
Not George.
Not George. Perry.
Nope. Not Charlie either, the oldest one. Arnold? Is there a son?
They have
Arnold?
Another damn... No
way. No, it's not Arnold.
Anyway.
Charlie does dragons. Oh, what the hell is his name?
Doesn't matter right now.
Bill. It's Bill Weasley.
Okay.
Bill Weasley.
That was great. So.
He's the one that marries Fleur.
Oh my God.
Delacour.
They. They're at the sarcophagus. They realize the relic can open up and it acts as a key. They put it into the sarcophagus, but they don't turn it. They end up taking it out. And like fleeing because the Magi come and tell them to leave. A big shootout happens. Mm-hmm. And they say, you have one day to leave. They all get super drunk. And
Evie and Evie Rick flirt more.
Is very drunk. And she says, I'm going to kiss you, Mr. O'Connell. And then passes out.
It's her famous speech of like her trying to figure out who she is as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And she has her like, I am a librarian. I love that speech of hers.
It's actually really good.
Yeah.
It's quite charming. We talked about it in the intro, and we talk about it all the time, about like shoehorned romances that are just unnecessary. This one doesn't come off like that. It was really sweet.
And it's a slow burn. Like, it starts off immediately. Like, it's not like, oh, at the end they realize that they actually want to be together. It's like, it's very obvious from the beginning. They're both into each other.
Yeah, there's like good tension, and they build it up realistically where like the characters have a scene where you're like, oh, that was a good thing that they did.
Mm-hmm.
That was an impressive thing that they did or whatever. And then the other character recognizes it. So it was well done.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it a lot.
Anyway, the Americans find this chest that they think will curse them. The main, our group of heroes actually open up the sarcophagus. And this is when they find the gooey mummy.
Nice gooey mummy.
And realize he was...
A big daddy,
alive.
At the very least, yeah. And they're like, wow, he got the hum and die. It's bad. He was a villain back in the day.
The Americans are back at the Statue of Anubis. They open it up and find the Book of the Dead and the organs to the Pharaoh's mistress, Anuxtamun. So, all of this is going down, and it's nighttime again. Evie steals the Book of the Dead from the Americans, and she opens it because she realized that it had the key, the same key from...
The sarcophagus.
And then she actually starts to read from it. Actually, it was really funny. When she opens the book, like all of this wind blows. I can't remember who said it.
Rick is like, that happens here a lot.
Yeah, that happens a lot around here. It was pretty funny because like spooky things have been happening all the time whenever they do stuff. It was just a cute little line.
Making fun of the movie in some ways, too, which I liked.
Yeah. So she's reading from the book, but foolishly, she does it aloud. And as she's doing that, she's unwittingly casting a spell. And so a plague of locusts descends on them. And also, like, way, way, way too many scarabs. This kind of starts, like, a chase scene as they're running around the ruins.
Well, she also wakes up the mummy. When she reads in the book, she wakes up the mummy, most importantly.
Yep. And so lots of crazy things are happening. They're running away from the mummy, the scarabs. They're trying to figure out what the hell's going on. They're falling into secret passages and booby traps in the ruins of Hamunaptra. Eventually, Imhotep finds Mr. Burns, one of the Americans, and steals his eyes and tongues. Tongue, singular.
So he can see and talk.
Rick comes upon them, and he's trying to, like, Imhotep is turning his sights on Evie. And so Rick tries to stop him by shooting him right in the crotch. Then the Magi come, and they're like, this creature is the bringer of death. He will never eat. He will never sleep. He will never stop. You have to run. And so they all kind of run from Hamunaptra. Meanwhile, Benny was being greedy. He's still in the pyramid. Or not, he's not being greedy.
He
got cornered.
Because everybody is like, it's just basically a madhouse.
It's
like
chaos.
It's just straight chaos. Because the mummy is trying to kill people. He's also trying to find the people who took Anuxtamun's jars, because they're the cursed jars, and like the curse basically said that anyone who takes the jars, like the mummy will try to like steal your flesh, essentially.
Yeah, and he needs that to complete his ritual to bring her back to life.
And he also needs like the people who stole her jars's like essence to like fully regenerate.
Yep.
He needs to like basically kill them all to like fully regenerate. So it's just like madness happening. And Benny is still like kind of trapped in the madness. He doesn't really get away with everybody else.
Yeah. And so the mummy Imhotep finds him. And so Benny takes out a cross and starts like saying a prayer, and it has no effect on Imhotep. So then he like tries another holy symbol and another and another and another. It was a pretty funny scene, just like telling you what type of person Benny is. And then finally he takes out the Star of David and starts doing a prayer
in Hebrew.
And Imhotep stops and he's like, oh, the language of the slaves. I can use you, basically. And this now Benny is now on Imhotep's team to
save himself. Imhotep can obviously only speak ancient Egyptian. He can't communicate English with the outside world. So Benny becomes his like translator and henchman, basically. Yeah.
And Imhotep offers Benny gold to help him get the organs and the people back.
Mm-hmm. He's basically like, help me find the Americans that stole the jar so I can regenerate and save my lady love.
Yeah. So now I'm going to kind of just skip ahead a little bit because a lot of the same things happen. We go back to that main city.
Cairo.
Was it Cairo? I missed where it was.
Yeah, they like go back to Cairo and the Magi are like, we'll try to take care of this. You guys just get out of here. You cause enough trouble, basically.
Yeah. So Evie and team and then the Americans are all back in Cairo. Rick's trying to pack her and she's unpacking as he's packing. It's a great
scene. She's like, we need to still destroy this mummy because we woke it up. And the Americans are like, we're trying to get out of here, but our boat doesn't leave till tomorrow.
Yep. And so basically the next like half hour of the movie is Imhotep slowly picking off the Americans and slowly rejuvenating himself as they mm-hmm. try to get away.
We find out that the curator from the museum is actually also a Magi.
Yep.
He's like Secret Service.
Secret Service, yeah.
Yeah.
And
they like team up with him and the Magi.
This is also when like Imhotep zombifies the town and they all try to get him.
They become his like henchmen by like hypnotizing them, basically.
Yep. I don't think he was hypnotizing them because they all had like marks on their face, like they were decaying. I think he like melted their brains.
I don't know. Whatever he did, it was, I felt bad for the poor people of Cairo.
Yeah. So basically they get cornered. They're in the museum. And this is when they find the ancient writing where Evie's translating it and realizes that they got it wrong. And the Book of the Dead was supposed to be in the statue of Horus, but since it was in the statue of Anubis, that probably means that the Book of the Living of Amon-Ra was actually in the statue of Horus. Mm-hmm. So they're like, if the Book of the Dead brought him back, the Book of the Living will probably kill him. We have to go back to Hamunaptra.
Mm-hmm.
They get cornered, though. Imhotep takes Evie prisoner. She, like, gives herself up to try to save everybody. Imhotep's like, LOL, no, kill them.
Yeah, because Imhotep wants to sacrifice Evie. He needs, like, a human sacrifice to bring an Anaxenamun back. And for some reason, when he first woke up, he thought she was her. He got, like, confused. He, like, yeah. latched onto her, kind of, and he's like, no, she'll just be my sacrifice.
Yeah, I'm not sure if, like, Anaxenamun would, like, be in her body or something. It wasn't very clear.
I don't know, but there's some added elements if you watch Mummy Returns to that. Evie is, like, a reincarnated version of the daughter of the Pharaoh,
mm-hmm.
who they killed.
Yeah, very bizarre.
Very bizarre, but you know what? I still like the series.
So they end up having to go back to Hamunaptra. They get their friend Winston, who is a pilot from the war, who fly them back to Hamunaptra.
Yeah.
The mummy tries to stop them by conjuring up a sandstorm. They make it pretty close, but unfortunately they crash and Winston dies. But he actually wanted to die like this, so it actually kind of was a good ending for him.
Yeah, Winston weirdly wanted to die in battle, and he kind of did. So, yeah.
So then a lot more chaos happens as they make it into Amun-Ra. Hamunaptra. Imhotep is fully rejuvenated. He's trying to get the ritual started to bring back Anaxenamun. They stop the ritual. They start the ritual. They stop the ritual. They stop the ritual. Imhotep brings back his priests, his mummy, his priests that were mummified with him. He like brings them back as his guard now to fight. Mm-hmm.
So like Rick is fighting all these mummies while Jonathan is trying to read the Book of the Living.
Yeah, they found...
But his Egyptian is not as great.
Yeah, they found the book. Evie's, like, coaching him through the words.
While fighting off Anaxenamun.
It's really chaotic, but great. The choreography is wonderful.
I love the fighting scenes with the mummies, like Rick going to battle the mummies, because I mean, it was just fun because obviously they're like older, decrepit things, but they also have like special skills. Like they don't just die if you cut their heads off, right? Yep. So the way that they kind of interpreted the fight scenes, like at one point there's an arm crawling to get a sword and Rick can't quite reach the sword to protect himself. So as soon as the mummy's arm grabs the sword, he has enough wingspan to not maybe grab the hilt of the sword, but grab the mummy's arm that's holding the sword and he like cuts its legs off. I don't know. It was just a cool way to like choreograph fight scenes with.
They were very clever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this scene went on like a good amount of time, but it didn't feel too long.
Mm-mm.
Like they mixed it up a lot, which was really nice. Like they, every time there was a fight, it was a different type of fight. There was new stakes. There was a new element at play. It was really fun.
It wasn't just Evie lying on the stone slab, like tied to it either the whole time. Like at one point they did get far enough to release her, but then she had a fight too, you know? So it wasn't just like thinking about like Roger Rabbit with the dip, right? Where they're just like dangling there the whole time and they might die. It changes
every time.
Mm-hmm.
And then also Jonathan like gets control of another group of mummies and turns them on it by reading from the book. It's really cool. There's a lot to it. But basically, eventually they figure out the spell that's in the Book of the Living that should defeat Imhotep. This like chariot comes and like steals his soul, it looks like.
They take his immortality.
But he's alive, yeah. They were like, I thought this was going to kill him, but it actually takes his immortality. And so then finally Rick is able to stab him in the stomach. And kill him.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and his famous last words are, "Death is only the beginning," which is what he said when he was mummified as well.
And so now they are all in Amunaptra, and Benny had been raiding it and looting it this whole time. He accidentally triggers a booby trap that makes the entire
city collapse
into the sand. So it slowly starts descending into the sand. They all are able to get away except for Benny. He is trapped due to his greed. And his send-off is amazing. He's, like, in the room with all of the gold, and he gets trapped, and he just has his torch. And then slowly all these scarabs start to come in, and then he's, like, getting circled by them, and then his light goes out, like, his torch burns out, and they all, like, climb on him, and you hear the sounds of him, like, getting eaten and screaming. It's gruesome, but really well done.
Yeah, that's Evie was saying, like, people like you always get their comeuppance.
Yeah.
And he's like, nervous. He's like, always? He's like, always.
It was really funny.
It's true. It happens. He gets his comeuppance.
It wasn't him being like, no, we don't. He was like, wait, we do.
He got scared because he's so a coward. Funny. It just stuck to his character. I think that's another thing I liked about this movie. There's a lot of action, a lot of people dying, but it's never gory.
No, they do a good job kind of hiding it. Like when all the Americans died, they don't like show it. They just show their mummified remains, mm-hmm. you know?
Or, like, even the scarabs, like, they don't show the scarabs eating people. They just kind of, like, swarm them. And when they leave, someone's just, like, left behind, like, kind of mummified similarly.
Yeah. Not gory, but, like,
no blood, really.
You know what's happening, so it's creepy and, like, you know, you're not, like, comfortable with it necessarily, but it's not, like, gory.
Mm-mm.
But anyway, they all make it outside. They make it back to the camels. Jonathan's like, oh, I guess we're going home empty-handed again. And Rick's like, I wouldn't say that. And they do a big time smooch, him and Evie. And then they all get on the camels right off into the sunset. And then we realize that Benny had been able to make it out with some treasure. And they are riding away on the camel that has a bunch of treasure. So ostensibly, mm-hmm. they're going to get a little bit of money.
Yeah, because we saw Benny, he got out and loaded a camel and he was about to leave. And then he kind of like looked back at Amunaptra. I was like, oh, I'll just go back one more time, you know? And his greed really did kill him.
It really did. But anyway, woof, what a movie. I mean, like, I really, like, skipped some parts. It was so full.
I feel stressed out after listening to you say all those things so quickly.
It was tough. I did my best, but it was fun, though. That was the thing. So much happened, but, like, it tied together. Like you said, it didn't leave any loose ends. It really tied it together, and it felt like a whole package. So it was very engaging in that way.
Mm-hmm.
There was never really a scene where you're like, why is this in the movie?
No, for sure. I definitely thought there wasn't any, like, throwaway scenes, really. And all the plot holes were filled. It wrapped up very nicely, and it was also a very satisfying ending.
Yeah, like you were hinting at with the map. And they found the map to Amunaptra. You think that he accidentally burned it because he was being clumsy, but then later on you realize he was probably burned it on purpose to...
He definitely burned it on purpose because he was trying to protect the city.
Yeah, right? So, like, all of those little things, it ties together pretty well. And then, yeah, I just want to say it again, because this part, I really did like it. There wasn't really a main character. Everybody had their time in the spotlight. Everybody was useful or, yeah, useful. Like, even Benny, right? He was useful in a way to Imhotep, not to, like, the main characters, but, like, everybody did something. The mm-hmm. Americans at first felt like they might just be throwaway characters, but then they were in the movie a lot.
Mm-hmm. And they, like, you know, yeah, they were competing, but they also, like, teamed up when it made sense. Like, that also felt really human to me, was when things got spooky, they're like, eh, let's join camps, you know?
Yeah.
That felt like a very human thing as well.
I also liked the brand of humor in this. It wasn't, like, big funny jokes. It was just kind of, like, really quick one-liners. Like, the one that I wrote down that I loved was when O'Connell is threatening Benny, and Benny's like, think of my children. And he's like, you don't have any children. He goes, someday I might. It's really good. Like, silly, cuts the tension a little bit, but then you're right back into it.
I also felt like they made fun of the movie a lot.
They kind of did.
With their jokes, which I kind of like.
It was almost satirical.
In some ways it was,
like,
yeah.
On the action genre, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting how they portrayed some of the lines that they, like, the lines that they chose to put in the movie felt very deliberate.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite scenes, though, is when Evie and Rick are on the boat, and he's, like, kind of, like, preparing for war for Hamunaptra, because he's like, I know, like, something bad is out there, and he's, like, cleaning all of his guns, and, like, she's talking about what her goals are for going to the city, and they're just, like, getting to know each other more. And she asks him, like, why did you kiss me?
Mm.
And he's like, well, I was about to get hanged. It seemed like a pretty good idea at the time. And she gets so mad. I don't know. It just, elements like that, I don't know, made the characters feel very real to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it really did. And then, like, her, later on in the boat, she's, like, in her dressing room, like, thinking about the kiss a whole lot and stuff. It's just, yeah. It felt very human. It was very nice.
I don't know. Maybe that's speaking more to the romance side than the funny side, but I felt like the relationship still had a lot of humor in it. But also, I guess I'm bringing it up because it really was like a slow burn romance that was sprinkled in throughout. So it wasn't just like at the end. I feel like a lot of action movies at the end, like when they're about to like die or the culmination, they're like, oh, I really care about you. And then like something happens, you know?
Yeah. They have like a big kiss, and you're like, well, that just seems like stress-induced kissing, not like
exactly I like, kissing. Like trauma bonding, like, oh yeah, we're gonna survive this or not type thing. Like, you could tell from like when they were first introduced what was gonna happen.
Yeah. And you know, we've talked about this in our personal life. That was one of my big worries with Rogue One. Remember at the end of the movie, they're sitting on the beach, and I was like, oh god, don't have them kiss. And then they end up just like
dying
together. It felt like that type of thing. Like, it didn't feel like they were going that direction where it was, like you said, like trauma bonding or something. They mm-hmm. built up a relationship by hanging out with each other and liking each other. And then also, like, they didn't, like, say, I love you and stuff like that. It wasn't, like, way over the top. They just, like, kissed and rode on a camel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if the next movie opened and they weren't, like, together anymore, I don't think a lot of people would have been like, oh my god, how dare you?
Yeah, but the next movie opens and they're married with a kid, so.
But, you know, like, I like that the stakes of their romance felt lower, so that it could go in any direction, instead of, like, the writing trying to set them up as, like, star-crossed lovers that have no chance but to be together, and, like, that's the point.
Yeah.
But they had, like, 4 seconds of screen time share.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, the pieces in the movie felt really well done. Like, the action-adventure storyline was really well developed, and I also think that the sprinkled-in romance story was actually also really well developed. And they, like, what's the word I'm looking for? They, like, coexisted or, like, harmonized together really well. Intertwined. Yeah. They intertwined really well.
Yeah. Like,
without taking away from either aspect of the movie.
Yeah, and without, like, a focus on only one character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Evie wasn't his arm candy, and he wasn't her arm candy, or anything like that. They were both humans.
Well, that's the thing that I was gonna say. Like, I actually also really, really liked Evie's character. I thought they did a good job with her. She was definitely, like, very, very intelligent and smart and independent, and, like, definitely leading a lot of their group's, like, dig and everything like that, and, like, had so much knowledge and was calling a lot of shots, honestly. She didn't just roll over for people either, which I really liked.
Yeah, she was wicked independent and strong and like, had her own opinions and mm-hmm. wasn't afraid to, like, go off on her own, which was great. But she also didn't feel like, what's the phrase, like a Mary Sue or something, where she's just, like, all powerful and, like, doesn't need no man type thing and, like, just, like, storms off and you're like, wait, what? You're a librarian. Why are you able to do this?
Well, I mean, we have tons and tons of examples of media in the past where men are allowed to do that, though.
No, I know, but I don't think it's a good thing for men to be.
What do we call them? Mary Sues? What's the male equivalent term for that?
I don't know.
Captain America?
Mario John.
Mario John.
I'm just using the name, I'm sorry.
Well, even Evie, like, she was the one negotiating Rick's release from prison. Uh-huh. It wasn't Jonathan, you know what I mean? It wasn't Rick getting himself out of that situation on his own. Like, it was Evie right from the jump, like, going in and getting things done, which I liked.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really good.
She was the one pushing to go back and defeat the mummy, too. She was, like, unpacking herself as Rick was packing her to go away.
And, like, she would have gone there by herself to try and figure it out, which is the fun thing. Mm-hmm. But they also do a good job of making it seem like they needed the whole party for it to be a success. I don't know.
They definitely did, which I liked.
The character building in this movie was honestly very surprising to me. But I think this is one of the things in the opening, you teased me a little for it, where I said it, I remember it being a pretty full-bodied movie. Mm-hmm. I think that's partially why, is because all of the characters were important. Like, I think 100 people could go into this movie and all of them, well, not all of them, but lots of them would pick different people that they thought was the coolest and was the best and they identified with most. Mm-hmm. Instead of it just being like, oh yeah, I like him because he's the lead. Which I think is tough to do, but it makes it a good movie.
You know, like, when, like, a movie comes out and, like, I don't know, you, like, cereal boxes would advertise and you get, like, certain characters featured on the different boxes?
Yeah.
Like, if there was a mummy, like, cereal set and, like, you're at the store, like, oh, damn, they only have Jonathan here. Or, you know, like, people wouldn't be sad. There'd be so many people for you to pick from. It wouldn't be disappointing to be stuck with only one character on your cereal box.
Yeah. Switching it up a little bit, another thing I really loved was the attention to detail. Like, it was little, but, like, for example, at one point, Jonathan gets a scarab in him as well, and Rick has to cut it out. And then they don't show this happening, but later on, in the same scene, he has a sling on now, because he just got a knife shoved into his arm to get a scarab dug out, you mm-hmm. know? So, like, they didn't have to, like, show us him getting the sling on. They also probably didn't even need to have him in a sling. But it was just a fun a little bit of attention to detail.
I think there's a lot of attention to detail. And I think one that I followed a lot throughout the movie was who had the key. Mm-hmm. They, like, constantly, whoever had the key or the relic, like, it would get left behind. There would be an action sequence and someone would have to go back and get it. And, like, that person still had it later on when they're looking for the key, like, a half hour later.
Yeah.
Or, like, oh, he has the key. It's in his robes. And, like, that was said, yeah, I don't know, like almost like 30 minutes. Or 40 minutes before in the action when they're reunited.
Yeah.
Because it's when he takes Evie and then they have to go back through all those loopholes. They have to Hamunaptra. And then Jonathan is like fighting with the mummy later and he's up close to him. And then later he's like, oh, I got the key. Like, right.
Yeah, you like pickpocketed him.
Basically, yeah. And like, I feel like that was something I followed.
Yeah, it didn't just like teleport around to whoever mm-mm. was convenient.
Or people like they were had to run away and they got like left behind. Someone would always go back and grab it.
Yep.
You know, and it was just like a throwaway thing that you wouldn't really think about sometimes.
Yeah. The also the music, really fun.
That was instant nostalgia for me.
Yep.
As soon as the movie opened and the music started playing, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this.
Yeah. One thing, though, I wanted to ask your opinion on as well, because mm-hmm. I think a lot of movies that take place in this type of location, in this type of time frame, and when they come out during this time, like in the late 90s or earlier, or I mean, even today, what am I saying? Can portray people of a certain background with really bad racial stereotyping. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel like there was too much of that in this movie. Like, it felt okay.
I don't know. I feel like there, if you wanted to like really get down to it, like, yeah, it was a fun movie, but I also think like, there was some issues that I noticed. I don't know. I feel like the movie was very centered on white people, mm-hmm. like Americans and, you know, people from the UK coming to Egypt to basically like plunder treasure from ancient Egypt and not appropriate their culture, but like literally like take it. So, I mean, that's just a problem with colonialism in general. But I think I don't know. I guess my a couple things that came up for me while watching this, I'm trying to be thoughtful here. A, the people who are most likely not white, like the warden was kind of stereotyped as like greedy and like haggling, and he was from Cairo. And I don't know what Benny's background was, but he was also kind of stereotyped as like greedy and cowardly.
I have no idea what Benny's background was.
I don't know either, but he wore like a fez hat and he had an accent. And the other thing that kind of like stood out to me too was like the people of Cairo were the ones that were zombified by Imhotep, but like all the Americans and white people weren't, and they were still like free moving.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like,
how does that work?
I don't know. I was just interested to see that choice. And like you said, the people of Cairo are kind of like shown to be like almost like lepers, which is an interesting choice. Like they're like something was going on with their faces and stuff.
I had thought that was because of his spell, not because like they were dirty people, but maybe I'm
remembering. Oh geez. Yeah, no, I'm not really sure what was going on there, but it was just like an interesting like juxtaposition of how like in general the white Americans were presented during the movie and then the people of Cairo were. It was just like kind of like a jarring juxtaposition. I don't know. That's just kind of what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, there was also like when they were in Hamunaptra, like all of the American party were like knowingly sacrificing their like helping worker people from Cairo to do the booby traps.
They
and
had
stuff.
The party and they were kind of like, oh, wait, like the ancient Egyptians were known for their booby traps. Have like the people, the day laborers basically like open it up because it might. They basically like should have sacrificed them, like you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, they knew that was going to happen.
Yeah. So like there was definitely some problematic pieces. I think, was it historically accurate to the time in 1923?
Probably.
Unfortunately.
But I also think like they kind of avoided like having anybody with like really over the top accents and stuff, or like making the people from like the Egyptian people like the butt of every joke or something. Like it at least avoided some of that stereotyping. So it wasn't like egregious, I guess it was my take on it.
Yeah. It was definitely a very white-centered movie in a non-white location, though. I don't know. Those are just my kind of off-the-cuff thoughts about it. But that's a good point about the workers getting sprayed with the acid. They were being bad people.
Yeah.
But I think the movie wasn't trying to hide that they were being bad people by doing that, though, either.
Yeah. And it definitely didn't come across to me as, like, making fun of any of the cultures or, like, history in the movie, which I think is important.
I don't know. I also don't really know how accurate a lot of the things that they were saying about ancient Egypt was either. Yeah. I didn't do any research there, to be honest.
I'm curious what the languages they were speaking, if they were accurate.
Okay, so I looked this up to see what was going on.
Awesome. I forgot to look it up, so I'd love to know.
Yes, because I was very curious. So according to the internet, when Imhotep and Benny were speaking Hebrew, they were speaking in like modern Israeli. They weren't speaking in like the ancient version of the language, which is what they would have been doing if the movie were accurate, but they were actually speaking in Israeli. But then the Egyptian, like when they were speaking in quote unquote like ancient Egyptian, apparently they were trying to speak in what they believed ancient Egyptian would sound like, but the problem is that no one really knows what that language would sound like because it's a dead language, so it's like loose to interpretation. But it wasn't like actual Egyptian in today's form that they were speaking, but they were apparently they had used like some language consultants were trying to speak what people believed ancient Egyptian could have been.
I mean,
but depending on who you talk to, like that could be anything because no one's heard the language in thousands of years, you know.
At least they did the effort and didn't just like have them like make up a language and just like do gibberish or something.
It's like a cursory glance at like some research there, but it was like an attempt to be ancient Egyptian. It's just like there's so many different ways you can try that, you know?
Yeah, that's cool. Because I actually really liked when they were speaking different languages because it to me sounded real, but I had no idea. So I was curious like how they were handling those.
It sounded like a real language to me.
Yeah. I guess, do you have any things that you didn't like?
Honestly, not really. I actually really enjoyed this movie as a whole.
Yeah.
I would say, I mean, some of the special effects, you could tell they were older, but they weren't bad.
No.
I liked how it tied up in a bow.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed the characters.
Yeah.
The pacing wasn't bad. It was long, but the pacing wasn't bad.
Yeah. The only real negative I could pull out, and I can't really say it's even a negative because I don't know how I would change it. It probably didn't need to be as long as it was, but it also wasn't bad that it was that long.
No.
So, like,
I feel like there would have been more loose ends if they didn't have it as long. You know?
Yeah.
You probably didn't have to explain every piece of it, but I kind of liked it that way. I like to have a neat bookend.
Yeah, you know? Like, the part I'm thinking of is, like, maybe the scenes in Cairo where they, like, got back from Hamunaptra and then before they went back probably couldn't have been tidied up a little bit, but, like, overall, it really wasn't bad.
I enjoyed it. This was, like, a very strong wine for me, honestly.
Strong wine?
Strong wine, yeah.
Yeah, I think that this aged really well, and this is, like, a true wine, where I'm surprised that at well how well it held up. Like, it might have gotten better, especially, I can't stop saying it, the special effects blew me away. They like, actually, like, go toe-to-toe with movies that come out today. And I don't know how that happened.
I don't know. For me, it was just the story was really well done.
The story was great.
It was well acted, and, like, the characters, I feel like the actors really embraced their characters and made them come alive.
Yeah, and I was, as a man, I was very happy with how Rachel Weisz's character was written and the opportunities that she was given to act that character. And I'm happy to hear that you seem to agree with that a little bit, because that's probably always the biggest risk for movies that came out in this time frame.
I liked Evie a lot. I really wanted to be Evie as a kid.
Yeah.
She was inspiring for me, so.
Yeah, I think she's a great role model and a good inspiration.
I remember specifically, too, I, like, always wanted to do my eye makeup the way she did it, and I could never, ever do it. I looked like I had a black eye.
And she,
if she was actually wearing all that makeup in the desert, it would be
all over.
All under the eyes right there, let's be real.
Also, I guess a bit I should give kudos for is she definitely was not, like, an over-sexualized female character at all. Like, there's a couple of scenes where she was wearing attractive clothing, but it was not over-the-top sexual.
Yeah, there was, like, that scene where the warden made a pass at her, and, like, Rick obviously also kissed her without her consent necessarily, you know, off the cuff. So, like, there was some, like, she was definitely a sexualized character, but, I mean, like, compared to, like, Who Framed Roger Rabbit we watched, like, last week, like, oof, nothing like that.
Or literally, the
under wraps.
Under wraps with a adolescent.
Yeah. When you think of it that way.
Like, and she kind of, like, stuck up for herself in those scenes as well. And she wasn't put in, like, way, like, revealing outfits and stuff is more what I was saying. So I was happy with the direction.
And, you know, like, yeah, it's great she was able to stand up for herself, but, you know, women shouldn't have to do that.
I disagree.
I just want to throw it out there because there's a lot of people out there like, oh, why didn't someone say no? Or, you know, why didn't they say anything? You know, it happens all the time. So I just wanted to, not saying you were saying anything bad. I'm just throwing it out there in general.
I really wasn't going that direction at all.
I know. I know.
But yeah, so strong wine for you. Mm-hmm. I definitely think that this is a wine as well. And honestly, like, maybe even surprising. Like, I thought it was going to age pretty well, but I had a couple of worries going in. I think it was great. So definitely watch it. It was so fun. Brendan Fraser's great. It was just wonderful to see him on screen again. I don't know. It was really fun. Ensemble cast that does a great job in a pretty fun movie.
I really want to watch the second one now.
Yeah.
So what are we going to be watching next?
Yeah. So next week we have another drink break episode for you guys. We're still doing this experiment, having a lot of fun with it. And then the one after the drink break is going to be my pick. I'm really, really excited for this because we haven't done anything animated in a minute. Wait, we just watched Roger Rabbit and...
So it's half animated, half live action.
We're watching a fantastic, phenomenal, gorgeous animated movie, Spirited Away.
Milk.
What? that's...
Well, you just hyped it up so much, I had to counterbalance you.
That's grounds for divorce. This is one of my most nostalgic movies, though. I, like, can place myself in my body watching this for the first time.
I watched it in the movie theater with my grandma, and it scared the shit out of me. This movie scared the crap out of me.
I'm jealous. I did not see it in the theater. I saw it in my bedroom on Cartoon Network with lots of commercials, so it was like 3 hours long.
Oh, my God. It was still long regardless. I watched it at the NJ Pack with my grandma. It wasn't, like, released. I don't think it was released in theaters in the U.S., like, regularly.
Mm-mm.
So, but, like, the New Jersey Performing Arts Center, like, had a showing of it, and I watched it there with my grandma.
So I'm really, really excited for this one. I love it.
I have one of those little sit guys on my car key chain.
You do.
Mm-hmm.
I just love all of Studio Ghibli stuff, but this one is my favorite, well, maybe not even my favorite, but my most nostalgic, because it kind of kicked off Studio Ghibli for me. So really, really pumped to watch that. So that'll be in 2 weeks. Next week will be a drink break.
Are we going to watch dubbed or are we going to watch subtitle?
Fantastic question. Might be hard to take notes if we're reading, but it's better. We'll let you guys know.
I know this is going to take you a while to think out, so I wanted to give you a head start on that thought process.
Thank you for that.
No problem. So you can find us on at Wine or Milk on Instagram.
Yep.
Nope.
Nope.
On Twitter, you can find us at Wine or Milk, at Wine or Milk Podcast on Instagram, Facebook.com/Wine or Milk Podcast.
No.
Wine or Milk?
Yeah.
Shit, you do it. I don't know what your socials are.
Okay, so at Wine or Milk on Twitter, at Wine or Milk Podcast on Instagram, Facebook.com/Wine or Milk, WineorMilkPodcast.com, WineorMilkPodcast@gmail.com.
Nailed it. You did such a good job. Catch you on the flip side, and don't wake up any mummies in between episodes. And if you do, please contact your local magi and put it back in the ground. Thanks.
Oh my God.